When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday, everyone.
Welcome to the Two Mats regular Q&A episode, brought to you by the New European Newspaper.
A beacon of clarity.
Shall we steam straight in?
Yeah, shall I read it out? The Joseph Round... This is the first question. It's from James Lawler. It's a good question. The Joseph Rowntree Foundation issued a report into the rise of poverty in this country, which was shocking. It has been covered more in the German media than in this country. Why are all the media so bad at covering such issues as poverty and go nuts over culture wars? Also, Chancellor said earning $100,000 a year isn't a lot. Jeremy Hunt, that is. Is this an admission that the Tories have failed Middle England? Good question, James.
Very good. Reckon? Well, I mean, what's the answer to that? I think the answer is quite simple. They go more about culture wars because they get more clicks on online than...
It's not doing them much good, though, is it?
No. I was told by someone yesterday, that someone who works within the BBC, that the ability for people to get commissioned long analytical pieces about Europe is getting harder and harder and harder.
Is that
because
right?
All they're interested in is clicks. And they are, you know, this is the BBC, which has no business model around clicks.
No.
But they want to be top of the list. And
yes,
they want
of course,
the clicks
yeah.
all the time. So, you know, they're commissioning stuff around... stuff that will incentivize the click on social media. And that is a little bit tragic, if you ask me. I can understand popular newspapers. I can understand why they would go down that model. But the BBC, you know, why?
No, it is tragic. And I think, you know, without revealing editorial strategic matters, which are in your wheelhouse, you know, the New European is very alive to this question of poverty and inequality and has plans to cover it, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%. You know? Well, we want to do a new set of reports, really, about what Keir Starmer...
Sort of beverage report.
Yeah,
kind of beverage report
for the years.
But I think James is right. It is shocking. And I also think, you know, what has happened to Jeremy Hunt, you know, in the sense that saying 100,000 isn't a huge salary... is an astonishing thing for any Chancellor of the Exchequer, any politician to say.
Yeah. Who's he talking to when he says that? Because he knows he's going to piss off a lot of people.
Well, I think he's trying to say is, I mean, I don't want to give him too much sort of credit, but, you know, I think he's trying to say everyone's hard-pressed. But there's hard-pressed where you can't go on two holidays a year suddenly, or your school fees are... more expensive or whatever. I don't know what it means. And there's hard-pressed when you can't afford to feed your children.
Yeah, when you're down the food bank.
You know, down the food bank, or you can't pay the heating bill. You know, the fact is 100,000 is way... I mean, anything higher than 81 grand puts you in the top 5%.
Yeah.
So you're really talking to a tiny, tiny group of people who are going to probably vote for you anyway.
Well, you know, the end of James's question is this an admission that the Tories have failed Middle England? Well, why stop at Middle England?
I think they're just totally disconnected.
They've failed everybody, haven't they?
I think they're... I mean, one of my dreads for this year, 2024, is just that this is this long, slow death of conservative Britain is going to take up, you know, so much time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need them gone... so that a new government can get on with the work that lies ahead, which is going to be pretty big.
Monumental. Well, let's just spin here, because it's a really interesting thing to do, to reverse the question and say, which section of Britain haven't the Tories failed? Is there anybody... I mean, seriously, is there a group of people you could say have done well under the Tories in the last 14 years.
No, and I think that James references culture wars, and I think that's a very interesting point because Rishi Sunak, who's not a natural culture warrior, did a sort of deal with the devil, if you like,
yeah,
and invested heavily in culture wars, particularly Stop the Boats,
yeah,
and the madness of the Rwanda policy. And all it's really done is raise expectations in the sort of Reform UK Farageist bit of the electorate, which have not been met.
Yeah.
So they're angry,
yeah,
because you can't outbid that gang. No, they'll always outbid you.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, that's been the problem since the 2016 referendum, is you can't be more Farage-ist than Farage.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting question, because if you ask me, you know, who is the Conservative base now, I don't know. And I think that, you know, people talk, oh, what about the red wall, what about the blue wall? I mean, I think, to be honest, the polls are not always reliable, but they're now indicating a level of discontent with the,
yeah,
Conservative Party, which is, I think, historic rather, yeah, than cyclical. It really is. And it's not 1997. It's a lot worse.
Right. Well, thank you, James.
Very deserved, you know.
Yeah, well deserved. Yeah, yeah. Totally. Next question, please. From Cheryl in Margate. Wonderful, wonderful Margate.
Love Margate.
Do you ever get down to Margate?
Not for too long, and I love it there.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely fantastic.
Fantastic place.
Is Trump's new position on the big issue of abortion going to increase his chances of winning?
Well, it's a very good question, and the reason it's arisen, this, thank you, Cheryl, is that Trump has declared that his position on abortion is that the Roe v. Wade, having been struck up by the Supreme Court, filled with justices he appointed, it's now been left to the states, and he's sticking with that status quo. Now, that he announced this early last week, I think it was Monday, and Democrats were initially a bit worried because they thought, ooh, you know, that's not asking for a national ban on,
yeah,
and maybe that makes him sound moderate, but in fact it's already unraveled, because step forward, the judges of Arizona which,
yeah,
is a swing, a very important battleground state, who have ruled that a 160-year-old law banning abortion, and really banning abortion,
from conception,
you know,
right,
like, yeah, even in cases of rape or incest,
yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
a law, by the way, that predates the existence of the state of Arizona, so it's
wow,
is applicable. And there are efforts by, you know, Republicans who see, even MAGA Republicans see this is a bad one, you know, trying to get it overturned. But this is what happens, is that the sort of decentralization of abortion decisions has led to a tsunami of crazy. So in Florida, there is in place a 6-week ban. 6 weeks, you know, and on the ticket in November.
Sorry, a ban on abortion after 6 weeks.
After 6 weeks, yeah, which, yeah, really means a total ban, because
who knows for sure?
In most cases, yeah, yeah, people don't, yeah, know they're pregnant,
yeah,
before. But, so there's that, and there's going to be a referendum in November on the day of the presidentials to kill this law,
yeah,
and enshrine the right to abortion in Florida's constitution. So Trump, as a citizen of Florida, Mar-a-Lago, yes, will have to, I mean, it'd be very difficult for him not to say how he's going to vote in that. But in any case, he's said before he supports the idea of national legislation. Biden has said he will legislate to make Roe v. Wade, or the equivalent, the law of the land.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no way that this very silly holding position is going to hold.
Yeah.
And I think that one thing that makes it good news is that this is Trump being dragged into terrain that he hates, which is policy and detail and facts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, he likes saying, you know, I don't like immigrants, you know, I hate Taylor Swift.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. I'll build a wall, but that's as far as his policy goes. Yeah.
You know, I think Joe Biden is on drugs. That's his happy place, right?
Yeah.
But now he's presented with, okay, you made this happen because you wanted to keep the evangelical base happy. Now it's happened,
yeah,
you know, and it's mayhem.
Yeah,
and Americans are interesting. It is true, it's a very divisive issue in America, but Americans do not like having their rights taken away. And it seems sort of inelegant to compare the right to abortion to the Second Amendment to carry out bear arms.
Yeah.
But the same impulse within Americans that says, hang on, you know, I used to have this freedom that you've taken away. And I think a lot of people, when they think about it, will think, you know, maybe what's all that about? You know, for 50 years we had the right to decide, the right to choose. And along comes a bunch of MAGA appointee judges and says, no, you can't have that anymore.
That's right. And at the same time talking about, you know, reducing government, but actually in effect imposing government.
Yes. That's a long-winded way of saying, Cheryl, I don't think it's going to increase his chances of winning. In fact, very far from it.
Thank you, Cheryl in Margate. Next question, please.
Do the Tories not realise that this constant harping on about Angela Rayner's tax is alienating even more people from them? G Swen 77 on Spotify. Thank you, G.
I don't know whether the Tories are the relevant players in this. I think it's the Tory press that are relentlessly beating up on Angela Rayner and this £1,500 tax that she may or may not owe. And when you stand it in the context of any conversation around tax and, you know, Lord Rothermere, non-dom of long standing, you know, Rishi Sunak,
Nadeem Zahawi having to resign,
you know, all of these people, whatever Angela Rayner's tax situation is, if she has made a mistake, then I think she should put her hands up and say, I've made a mistake. She says she hasn't made a mistake.
Yeah.
But for God's sake, let's have some bloody perspective on the matter, you know.
Perspective and also, come on, bits of the media, of the Mail, we're talking about. Do you think we don't know what you're trying to do?
Of course.
This is a dress rehearsal for how they're going to play the Starmer government, which is that Starmer is in on the bridge, but a crazy left-wing woman who, you know, comes from, in their view, the wrong side of the tracks, as it were, and is up to all sorts of mischief, is, you know, ruining the country. You know, Starmer, it's another challenge for Starmer, which is he has to make, you know, I think he's persuaded the public that he and Rachel Reeves are, you know, politically an item and get on. But it's in the same way that Blair was smart in making clear that he, you know, John Prescott was not just an ornament. You know, he was a deputy prime minister. I think it's very important that Starmer gives Rayner a big job with a big portfolio, deputy PM with, you know, and sticks beside her, hugs her close. Because
do you think he will, though?
That's to be revealed, isn't it?
Yeah.
There are certainly people in his circle who think he's a liability. I think she's a very, my personal view, I think she's a very canny and appealing politician. Yeah. I think that a government that's likely to look a bit chilly and bloodless, she'll give authenticity and, you know, a sense of purpose to.
Yeah, I agree completely.
That's why they're going for it.
Also, she's the closest thing you can say on that front bench to the traditional Labour values of working class progress.
Yes.
You know, she embodies that.
And you have to have that in any Labour government, all Labour governments, all governments, apart from this dying Conservative government, are coalitions.
Yeah.
And not to have a figure like Rayner, it would be a grave mistake. But I think they're circling the wagons up to a point around her. But obviously, you know, we know from when Starmer was ludicrously attacked by the Mail on Sunday over the beer. Do you remember the beer gate?
Absolute bollocks.
It was nonsense. They're very tenacious. So this is an early test for Labour, is, you know, do you stand by your people? You know, do you stand by the people who are your biggest assets? And I hope that they realise she is an asset.
Totally. All right. Well, thank you, GSwen77 from Spotify. And if you want to ask questions, by the way, you can email us at 2mats@tnepublishing.com. Or if you're listening on Spotify, you don't have to listen on Spotify, but if you are, you can easily message us there very, very simply. This podcast is brought to you, as ever, by the New European Newspaper, and we've got a great offer for you. Do you like the New European Newspaper, Matt?
Well, I like working for it and I enjoy reading it. So it's a double thumbs up from me.
So you're already a subscriber. So this
I actually am. I actually am.
This is of no interest to you because you'll feel like you're missing out. No, but it's a great offer.
I find it validating.
Okay. Well, listen, if you're not a subscriber, you really should be because you'll be supporting fantastic independent journalism that you'll actually enjoy getting posted through your letterbox every week. And as an exclusive offer for listeners of the Two Mats podcast, we've got free signed copies of James O'Brien's hardback book, which is a brilliant book, isn't
it? Great book. The book.
How They Broke Britain, and that's worth £20. And you can get that by subscribing for as little as £1 a week for all of our digital stuff. But if, like me, you love getting your hands on a physical newspaper every single week, you can get that delivered to your door for just an extra £1 a week, and that's a saving of around 80% on the cost of what you'd pay at the newsstand. So please do the right thing. Subscribe to The New European. Go to thenew.co.uk/2mats. That's the number 2, M-A-T-T-S. And tell them we sent you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, next question, please. Dave from Manchester.
What could border agency whistleblower David Neal, sacked for reporting airport security failings, tell us about how people who stab Iranian journalists can escape via Heathrow? Thank you, Dave. A lot packed in there.
Yeah, I don't quite know how to answer that. I mean, obviously we had this horrific incident of...
Yeah, I mean, I think what Dave is driving at is that fact one was that Neal was dismissed... He was as Chief Inspector of Borders and Immigration after sending a report on the problems with security to James Cleverly, the Home Secretary, in February. And it was a pretty damning report. He's now a whistleblower. The second bit of Dave's question, I'm fairly sure, refers to an Iranian journalist called Priya Zerati, who's horrifically stabbed outside his home on March 29th. And the assumption by law enforcement is that this was at the behest of Tehran, but no one knows.
Yeah.
And I think Dave is implying that the failed assassins have
just gone home.
Have gone home or gone wherever they go. I don't know whether they have. I don't know whether David Neal's got anything specific to say about this case.
Yeah.
But I think the sort of bigger point that Dave is making is that, yes, you know, if there are security problems at airports in this country, you know, we need to know all about it, obviously.
And I always think it's a miracle that that we are as... I know, obviously, horrible things, catastrophes happen from time to time.
Yes.
But it's a miracle that the people who keep us safe do keep us as safe as they do.
Yes, and all politics aside, I mean, one of the things that gets insufficient coverage is how many plots are foiled.
Yeah, totally. And all the time.
All the time. And, you know, the situation in the Middle East being what it is, and Iran's ambitions being what they are, you know, it's, I mean, it's being briefed very widely. This is not secret at all that there is a considerable, and Biden has said the same, you know, himself, in America, that there is, you know, there is now an elevated danger of terror attacks. So yeah. If there's something we could learn about airport security, you know, Mr. Cleverly, yeah. I'd like to know about it, and I'm sure you would too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also, I think it's worth pointing out the, not because I'm aligning myself or yourself to this, but the courage of so many journalists out there who
100%,
you know, especially in Gaza, you know, we've seen so many journalists killed in Gaza.
Yeah, and
in
I mean,
the last 6 months,
I would, where I can be unequivocally critical of the Israeli government is, you know, not letting Western journalists into Gaza except yeah. in heavily embedded conditions.
Yeah.
It's just wrong.
Yeah,
you know, you can't simultaneously claim to be a democratic, free nation and not let Jeremy Bowen in.
Exactly.
It's ridiculous.
Exactly. So anyway, best wishes to that Iranian journalist. I think he's out of hospital now, isn't he?
Yes, he's on the mend, although it was a pretty close call.
All right, next question, please. From Mark Leese, or Leesey, I hope I'm saying that right, Mark. Why is Starmer not inspiring people with what his mandate would be? He could proactively say, here is our first 100 days, like a president would, and give us hope. What do you think?
Well, I mean, we've been saying this.
Thank you, Mark.
We agree, Mark, that he does have to make a speech of this character at some point. I mean, you know, you don't get an inaugural speech when you're made prime minister. You get a sort of, you say a few words on a 10.
Podium, yeah.
But I would like to hear something more uplifting. I mean, it was interesting when we had Tom Baldwin, his biographer, into the studio for that very interesting episode, which I hope people will go back and listen to. You know, Tom essentially was saying that, you know, he doesn't do this. You know, he's a very balanced technocratic politician. And I think what's the big question, and I don't know the answer to this, is can a prime minister stroke president stroke leader of a modern democratic nation prosper like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I mean, I don't know the answer. I mean, because, you know, Biden can turn up the volume. We saw that State of the Union.
Amazing. Yeah,
you know, I mean, Biden is Scranton, you know, he's a bruiser.
But maybe there's a case for saying, because Starmer's expectation around this is so low, if he did step up and say,
yes,
here's a mandate, or here's a mission, give me the mandate for that mission, then it would be massively effective.
I mean,
you know,
look, he is a barrister by training.
Yeah.
We know he's not like Blair, who's a natural performer and thespian figure.
Yeah.
But Blair would be the first to say that his barristerial experience helped him enormously because,
totally.
You know, making a case in court is part performance.
Yeah.
I.
But he's no George Carlin, is he?
No. I mean, that's true. But you know, you never know with Starmer. There is part of me, a tiny part of me, that just, side bet, hopes that he's going to step up to the plate and that office will, or perhaps the imminence of office, will give him a sense that this is not an ordinary moment.
Yeah.
And that's what frightens me about it, is that he approaches this as in just a sort of rational next step. How do I get into power? How do I win the next election? All of which is understandable. This is, and we've, you know, it's been a refrain on this podcast from, you know, both of us, is that this is a very, very big year, a very, very big moment for this country and the world.
Yeah.
And we need something from him that indicates he gets this. And he has said things in pieces that indicate his sense of the moment. But there's nothing that rings in the ears. There's no resounding,
do you know,
stammer phrase.
The thing that I keep coming back to, and obviously this will turn off loads of people, but Jurgen Klopp, when he arrived at Liverpool, he said two very interesting things. He said, the most important thing is not how people see you when you arrive. It's how they see you when you depart.
Yeah.
Right. So Starmer's going to arrive. Let's give him the scope to grow into a role, and let's give him the scope to say that he will be a different man in leadership than he is in opposition. Okay, so let's give him that. But the other thing Klopp said, which he brought home in spades, was he said, we've got to turn this club from doubters to believers, you know? And we are a nation of doubters now, you know, and who wouldn't be full of doubt looking around you and seeing the last few years of chaos and ineptitude? Starmer's job has got to make us believers again in Great Britain.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
But he's got to give us something to hold on to. He can't just. It's got to be more than just words or a phrase. You know, it's got to be action.
Action expressed through words. I mean, I remember one of the thrills of my life was meeting Ted Sorensen, who was JFK's speechwriter. And I said, you know, I did my best JFK, and, you know, and I said, you know, did you have a part in writing the inaugural, Mr. Sorensen? And, and he looked at me and he said, ask not. Which I thought was so cool. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things about that, and I know people are men of our generation and get misty-eyed about the Kennedy brothers, and I'm not going to apologise for it, is that it was part of their... the whole way they operated was that you got together around you a group of inspiring, brilliant people. Uh-huh. And today, a group, you know, was all men in those days. It would be different.
Yeah.
But you paid a lot of attention, not just to your messaging in terms of social media or tweets, but you thought, how does this get through to what people are actually feeling and thinking?
Yeah.
You know, and I've noticed one of the things since we've done this podcast is we've often referred to things that one of the Kennedy brothers said.
Yeah.
Now, what does that tell you? That rhetoric, that language, has lasted since the 60s.
Yeah,
you know, it tells you that it works and it lasts. And I don't know whether Starmer has read the collected speeches of RFK Senior. I somehow doubt it.
Yeah.
But maybe we should send him a copy.
Yeah, yeah. I remember The Guardian did... Do you remember they did little booklets as freebies of great speeches of the 20th century? And I think...
RFK's speech the night that Martin Luther King was assassinated...
I'm sure that was one of them.
...is one of the great speeches of all time.
Yeah.
You know, whereas we've now got someone who said, you know, I came, I saw this room, it was a really big room, you know. It's incredible, isn't it? Sorry,
detergent.
Maybe you could.
Maybe you could shine a great big light.
Lot of creations. Maybe too many. I mean, how is it that JFK and Trump held the same office? How is it that Obama and Trump held the same office?
Oh my God! Right. Anyway. Okay. Thank you, Mark. Next question, please. From Ross in Edinburgh. Does it matter that Harold Wilson had an affair? Why are we so prurient? What's this about?
This is about a story that has sort of emerged in the last few days, courtesy of Joe Haynes, who was legendary. I mean, before there was Alistair Campbell, our friend and colleague, there was Joe Haynes, you know, who was the great historic press secretary and an ally to Harold Wilson. And Joe Haynes, I think, is now 95, and he has revealed that Harold Wilson... had an affair, and people have always speculated about Harold Wilson and Marcia Williams, who became Marcia Faulkner, but apparently he had an affair with Haynes's deputy, Jane Hewlett Davis, who died last year, aged 85.
And this was towards the end of his leadership, wasn't it? When he was starting to show a bit of decline physically and mentally.
It was quite late in the story.
So
my view is, are we prurient? Yes, we are, and we're too prurient. And my position has always been that in politics, politicians are entitled to a private life unless their actions involve hypocrisy or break of the law or Me Too type
or national security
or something like that. Yeah, exactly. I particularly don't like, for example. I thought that the sort of vilification of Boris Johnson's wife.
Yeah, which Marina?
Carrie.
Oh, Carrie Johnson.
You know,
yeah,
that
sorry,
it was all her fault, you know.
Yeah.
Was
yeah.
ridiculous because, you know, he's the Prime Minister. She's not. Now, maybe she was too influential, but there was a kind of, I find that kind of thing very distasteful.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have a harder line than you on this because I do think it cuts to the man's character as well. There's an element. And I'm not talking about being adulterous. Couldn't care two hoots about that. But kind of chronic adultery and looseness and you know, loose morals.
Pathological adultery,
Pathological adultery.
Does
I think that is relevant, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, I think you're right that I should acknowledge that if you are, and I think we both know who we're talking about here, if you just can't stop it, you know, and it becomes as it did with Boris Johnson, and I know this from people in Number 10, it got in the way of government,
right? Then it's a
because
then
he
it
was off,
challenge.
You know, doing whatever he did,
and
also was a very, very big challenge for protection officers,
yeah,
because moving. A prime minister, we see a couple of cars and, you know, a detective, but actually behind the scenes there are a lot of people, you know, and they hate being, you know, I've got to, you know, she's gone to sleep, could you take me to Worthing, you know,
who was the French who rocked up on a moped?
Oh god, that's right.
Hold on.
Yes, that's right.
There was photographs
astonishing
rocking up at his mistress's Pierre de Troyes on the back of a moped for a quick 20 minutes.
I mean, you know, the movement of heads of state is a fascinating subject. I remember Paul Condon, when he was commissioner of the Met, told me that when a American president comes to town, the British side, leaving aside the Secret Service, requires 1,000 officers to keep track of him, the team, what's going on, the threat level, all the bits on the
bloody
itinerary.
Hell.
Well, they've
the
got
cost of that.
People. I mean, amazing. Not to speak of, they also have to book 1,000 hotel rooms.
Bloody hell.
I mean, it's a really interesting subject.
The logistics
of it. You know, we just see, you know, Joe Biden talking to the Japanese Prime Minister and, you know, it's a nice picture of them walking through the White House. But actually, out of sight, both sides have huge security presence.
Amazing. So anyway, Harold Wilson.
Yes.
He was described, Bernard Donoghue was the other guy who knew. I mean, this is the most, I think, does it matter? Whether it matters or not, I don't know. But the most astonishing fact is that these two men kept this thing secret for 50 years.
That's the amazing bit, isn't it? I mean, I don't suppose anyone's harmed by it, but I checked up and his two sons, Robin is 80 and Harold Wilson and Giles is 76. His wife died a while ago. And so I don't think anyone is harmed by this.
No.
And I suppose it's true, isn't it, that to elaborate on what you said, that what goes on in the private life of a prime minister can be consequential. Disraeli supposedly had this long devoted marriage to his wife Marianne, who was supposed to be his best friend as well, as and it was a love match, but also she tolerated lots of affairs with young, he went off and had affairs with young men, allegedly. I didn't know this, but Harold Macmillan, I mean, Harold Macmillan's a good example, because there's no doubt that Macmillan's confidence was shot by the fact that his wife was having a semi-public affair with Bob Boothby for 30 years.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost, you know, if you had to assemble the central facts of Macmillan's life, that is one of them, which was that, you know, and Boothby was a libertine though old, too old to enjoy the 60s, a kind of precursor of the freedoms of the 60s. And Dorothy, you know, Mrs. Macmillan thought, well, you know, he seems a bit of fun.
Yeah.
And poor old Harold Macmillan, who was probably not a bit of fun.
Didn't look it, did he?
No, I mean, I think he thought that a wild night out was sitting by the file reading Trollope or Aeschylus or something, you know, and I'm not sure she agreed. You know, I've always felt sorry for him, you know, being that straight-laced at the very beginning of the 60s probably wasn't much fun.
No, probably
not.
Probably not.
Going to watch Peter Cook impersonate you,
The other amazing thing out of this whole story, because Bernard Donoghue was on, who was the other press secretary, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
So there was Joe Haynes. I don't know how they all
I'm not sure
he
was
in.
Press, but he was very key advisor, yeah.
And so he was on the Today programme and was brilliant. I think he's 92.
He's well into his 90s.
I think, as you said, Joe's 95 or 96. Yeah. I mean, incredible. But Bernard Donoghue was saying that Marcia Williams was so aggressive to Harold Wilson and so kind of nasty and nagging and was depressing the guy that they shared a doctor. There was like a Downing Street doctor. The doctor proposed to Bernard Donoghue that he bumped her off, that he gave her, that she was taking loads of uppers and downers and pills, right, on a daily basis. And the doctor said, for the national good, should I just slip her a bad pill and be done with her, you know? And they said, well, on balance, we fear it might be a breach of your Socratic oath.
Yeah, it's kind of like just a little bit too far.
Probably we can contain the problem.
Killing members of Number 10 staff is probably a bit...
Amazing time.
It is incredible, isn't it?
Amazing. One wonders what will come out in 50 years' time about...
Yes, and this from... I mean, Harold Wilson, who was always claiming that MI5 were trying to, do terrible things to him. You know, the fact that the doctor was saying, kill
your Lady Falconer.
Oh dear.
Right, well, thank you very much, Ross from Edinburgh. That's our last question. If you want to send us a question for next week's show, please email us or give us any feedback you like at 2matts@tnepublishing.com. That's the number 2matts@tnepublishing.com. We do love getting your messages.
We certainly do.
We do, don't we?
So have a great Sunday.
Yeah, and by the way, don't forget the great subscription offer that we've got running at the moment to the New European. If you like this kind of podcast, you're going to love the New European, and you get that free signed copy of James O'Brien's book, How They Broke Britain. So until next Friday,
have a great Sunday.
Have a great Sunday.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.